So we are talking about making a difference. This whole year is about making a difference. During the summer, we're talking about these circles of our life, and we're starting from the inside out. We just started last week, so if you're new into the series and you say, oh man, last week, you got to catch last week. Last week really gave us a capsule for what the whole summer is going to be looking like. Last week, we talked about, as a Christian, certain things about us that we were made to be like God in true righteousness and holiness, that we were made to live as Jesus lived. We were remade into Jesus to walk in love, to follow his example of love, to love the way Jesus loved, to do what Jesus told us to do. That we were formed as Christians, we were recreated, we were formed into the image of Jesus. When we were made at the beginning, we were created in God's likeness and his image, in the image of his being. But as Christians, when we gave our life to him, we're being remade. We're a new creation when we come up out of the waters of baptism, and we're being made new to be like Christ, to be conformed and to be transformed into Jesus' image. And so we talked about that last week, and then we kind of split the sermon last week. We talked about that a good deal, and we talked about one of the parts of our personal life to really make a difference in our personal life is to pray like Jesus. And we walked through the Lord's Prayer and took some notes there. And then we had the National Day of Prayer, which was one of our Make a Difference events this past week. We had a lot of people that committed to that and prayed. And that was just, that was a really nice time to be able to spend some time in prayer. I kicked it off at midnight, and I just couldn't get things off my mind. I was just praying for people with Mother's Day coming up. I know there's a lot of people that would like to be mothers, and so those were thoughts. And then there were friends of mine and church members here that have lost a mother, and so I was praying about them. And then that was just one portion. There's so many other different people I was praying for, and I text Walt about 12:35, and I was like, I'm still praying, but I'm passing a baton on to you. And he's like, I woke up at 12:15 to the Happy Dance song from Haiti, and so he was already thinking of me. But then I just kept thinking and praying about people, and just got on a YouTube kick with some audio adrenaline for some personal time there, and just ended up staying up a lot later than I probably should have, and then ended up just praying throughout the next day. So just really, really great. I don't know if anyone else had an experience like that for your National Day of Prayer time that you signed up for, but it's a great thing. Next year when we have that, I encourage you, sign up for that. It does wonders for you to set aside a time and say, okay, I'm going to pray for this amount of time, and the things that come to mind about people and events and things in the country and different things like that. It's just, we just pray. So praying like Jesus, we talked about last week. Today we're talking about spending our time like Jesus. So let's write this down just right out of the gate. We will only spend our time like Jesus when we let his outlook and attitude replace ours. We will only spend our time like Jesus when we let his outlook and attitude replace ours. How many of you guys remember the game King of the Hill? Some of you guys are thinking, oh, that was a TV show. But we know the game, okay? I would expect, Shane's raising his hand. Anything dangerous, I'd kind of expect Shane to raise his hand for that. I remember when I was a kid, we had one of those big metal domes made of triangles. You guys remember those on the playground? You remember those? And we were all over that. And you'd climb up the top and you'd put your feet on and you'd stand up there and you'd be like, all right, I'm king of the hill. And we'd fight for that position. And as a kid, I don't know how tall those were as an adult, but I think as a kid, it felt like it was about twice my height. And so I don't know how tall they actually were. They're probably teeny little now as an adult looking at them. But yeah, it was crazy. I mean, you're on this big metal thing, and I don't remember falling, and I don't remember any of my friends falling or getting hurt or whatnot. But yeah, I'd play King of the Hill on that thing. And you'd get up there, and you'd push and shove, and you'd pull, and you know, kids will play it on benches or logs or actually on a little hill sometimes. And we remember that game. We played. I remember first service, I mentioned that, and Monta's hand went up, and I was like, well, Monta, because she was like, yeah, I remember that game. You could just see it in her eyes, the fire of that, the King of the Hill. And we enjoyed that. And it was something about that game as a kid. But it didn't really stay in our childhood, did it? We kind of still play King of the Hill today as adults. And it might not be a medal, Well, it could be. That felt like a challenge. You just missed sparring class. We had sparring class Friday. We could have put pads on, gone at it. Your choice. I'll feel bad, though. But we experience this in our lives. We live King of the Hill still as adults. If we're honest with ourselves, we get sucked into adult King of the Hill. Are we distracted by trying to be top dog? I mean, when we think about what really bothers us in our life, are we bothered when we're not being served? Because, I mean, that's what King of the Hill is about. You're top dog. I'm the one. I'm entitled. I'm being served. Are we offended when that's not happening? Or are we more offended when we're not serving? When we see in our own lives, are we more frustrated with ourselves when we see times when we're not serving? You know, it's Mother's Day. One day, a mother of a couple of the disciples came to Jesus. And she was the mother. She was Zebedee's wife, the mother of James and John. And she came to Jesus to ask a favor of them. And her two sons were already part of the inner three, you know, James, John, and Peter. They were already, you know, it was well known that there was the 12 disciples, and then there were these special three that Jesus would take to these special occasions and events with him privately. And so this mother approaches Jesus with her two sons. And in Matthew 20, Jesus says, "What is it you want?" he asked. She said, "Grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom." Jesus tells her that she doesn't know what she's asking. You don't really know what you're asking, because to sit at my right or left, that to drink my cup, it's a cup of sacrifice. It's a cup of service. It's not an easy cup to drink. And then he gives this nice little affirmation right after that. And he says, "You will drink it." There's a boost of confidence. You will do this. You will drink this cup. And then he follows that up by saying, "But to sit at my right or my left, that's not for me to decide. That's for my Father in heaven to decide. That's not up to me." Well, the other 10 disciples heard about this event. They weren't very happy. They didn't take too kindly to this. This caused a bit of friction between the 12. You know, we almost had the first church split. Yeah, 2 and 12, you know, and just... Jesus didn't want to start that way. He said, "We got to put an end to this. We can't have this friction." They were indignant, the Bible says, against these two. And so Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great," say great, "whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." We've heard this before. We've heard this statement before, that Jesus came to serve, not to be served. But how often do we focus on being King of the Hill instead of servant of all? Let's write this down. It takes a conscious effort. It takes a conscious effort to shift our focus off of ourselves and onto the mission of Jesus. See, I think somewhere deep down inside of us, that fingerprint of God, the image of God that we were made in, we know we were made for something great. I don't think that's a bad thing. Jesus didn't say you shouldn't aspire for greatness. He just gave us a guide on the way to get there. Because I think we have an aspiration, all of us, we all think, "I've been made for something great," and that is a truth. You are made for something great. What I don't think that we get innately, what I don't think that we get, and I think this was kind of a purposeful separation, where here's an understanding where you know you are made for something great, but you need me to be your guide to get there. See, that's what I think we miss innately. I think inside of us, we know that we're made for something great, but we don't quite understand how to get there. And in our minds, the way to be great is to be King of the Hill. And Jesus comes along and says, "No, if you want to be King of the Hill in my kingdom, you serve everyone. If you want to be first, you're a slave." That's how. Be great. Everyone say great. Be great. But not by being King of the Hill. pushing people around and being served. Here's how you're great. You serve others. That's how you're great. The way to be king of the hill in Jesus' kingdom is to put on the garments of a servant, to drape a towel over our arm, and to grab a basin of water and wash feet. He said, look what I did for you. Now go and do this for others. So how do we know that our heart has been replaced with Jesus' heart? How do we know that his outlook, his attitude has replaced ours? This is a question, and this is a dangerous question. It's a really tough question to ask ourselves because it's very revealing. It's going to write this down. And it's the question that we can ask ourselves to get an objective view on this. When my mind is at rest, you know, when you're just not thinking about anything consciously, when my mind is at rest, do I daydream about what my next gain or achievement is going to be? Or do I daydream about ways that I can help others? Because that's very telling about who our core is. That's very telling about our heart. That's very telling about who we are on the inside. When we're left just to daydream and your mind just, you know, everything checks out, do you gravitate towards what my next achievement's going to be, what my next goal is, what my next gain is? And it's not bad to have goals. I have to be careful in this sermon because there's a balance to this. It's not bad to want to, you know, get a new sofa because the sofa you have, you sink way down into it. It's not a bad thing. But just as a question of your heart, when your mind's when your mind gets to rest, where does it gravitate to naturally? Does it gravitate towards things for you? Or does it gravitate towards things for others? And I think that's very telling of how me-oriented we are. As I think a lot of us would gravitate that way. And that tells a lot about me to me. Tells a lot about you to you. And I think it's very sobering to ask that question and to see what comes out of our heart when our brain's not actively thinking. How did Jesus live? Did he live for himself? Did he live for others? The inspiration behind this month's sermons came from a little 7-day devotional found in YouVersion. So if you guys have the Bible app, YouVersion, it's just called the Bible in the App Store, but it used to be called YouVersion, so some of you guys might know it by that. And the devotion found in there, it's called Like Jesus, and Lisa Shaw found it for us. And it's by Jamie Schneider, and it's just really, really good. One of the illustrations in one of the 7-day devotions, he says, imagine that after you died, a headstone is placed at your grave, and the etched epitaph reads, not to be served, but to serve. Now imagine the people who knew you best and loved you most showed up to visit your grave, and they read that inscription. How would they respond? Would they think, that's not exactly accurate? Or would they quietly nod their head in agreement, recognizing how well those words captured your life story? She continues, she says, each of us would love to have the words not to be served but to serve etched on our headstone. But even more important for followers of Jesus is to have those words etched on your heart. What a powerful little devotional thought there. Let's write this down. Serving others is not always rewarded. Serve anyway. It's not always rewarded. We don't serve for a reward. We don't serve for an attaboy, attagirl. We don't serve for a pat on the back. Serving is not always rewarded. Church, serve anyway. Look at how they treated Jesus. And he was all over the place doing all sorts of things. But if you just take all of the things that happened in Jerusalem, just that one little town, the same place where they screamed, crucify him, crucify him. He did all sorts of things in that. He taught in that city. Blind people were brought to where they could see. Deaf people could hear. Demon-possessed were freed of their demons. These people saw that. They heard about these miracles. They saw them themselves. Jesus served them. And look what they did to him. It's not always rewarded, but serve anyway. You know, sometimes our distractions are noble distractions, but they're still distractions. Sometimes we can be distracted by trying to find God's specific will in our lives, and we miss God's general will. So let's write this down. I'm going to unpack this a little bit. Am I distracted away from God's general will by trying to find God's specific will for my life? Before I go into this, it needs a preface, because there's nothing wrong with finding God's specific will in your life. I will preach that. I will continue to preach it. That won't change. The Bible teaches that. We have gifts that have been given to us by the Holy Spirit. You have a place in God's, in the body of Christ, in God's church. You have a place that's made for you, that God has made you for. Find that. Serve there. Be happy. Enjoy that for sure. So don't take this section as me saying not to do that. But sometimes we can become so obsessed with that one specific thing that we spend all of our resources, all of our emotions, all of our time, all of our every resource we have looking for that one thing. And we'll take spiritual gifts tests. We'll say, what do you want me to go? All of our prayer life will be spent. What do you want me to do, God, specifically? Where do you want me to be? Exactly what do you want me to do? Once again, not something that's bad to search for. But when that becomes your obsession, that you miss God's general will, then it becomes a problem. Then we're out of balance. And we ask ourselves, you know, what part of the body am I? Am I a leg? Am I an arm? Am I an eye? Am I a liver or a kidney? You know, one of the internal organs? I've always thought that I was the belly button, you know, of the body of Christ. And you know, sometimes I have like you guys see the extroverted traits I have. I've got some of those, but really, when you look at things, I'm kind of a textbook introvert. And so I really struggle. You know, where's my place? I guess the question that really vexes me is that if I'm the belly button of the body of Christ, then am I an innie or an outie? You know, instead of spending a huge amount of resources and thinking and thought into trying to find God's specific will for your life, what would happen if you spent some of those resources? I'm not saying sacrifice all of that searching, but take some of those resources and balance things out a little bit and use those to spend on God's general will. There's a nice balance captured here in 1 Peter 4, starting in verse 8. He says, above all, love each other deeply. That's general. Because love covers a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. That's general. Everyone should offer hospitality. When I take a spiritual gifts test, teaching is way up there. Hospitality? Whoa, not great. I'm way low. Does that mean that I'm exempt from showing hospitality? Does that mean I can just be rude to everyone? Absolutely not. This is a general will of God for our life. Offer hospitality. Gifted or not, that's what we're asked to do. Offer hospitality without grumbling. Then he goes into specific. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful servants of God's grace in its various forms. If anyone speaks, he should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. If anyone serves, they should do so with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and power forever and ever. Amen. So Peter brings in a nice mix. Here's some general will of God. Here's some specific will of God. Colossians 3, starting in verse 12. Paul writes, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves. This is all of us. All of us. God's chosen people, clothe yourselves with compassion, with kindness, with humility, gentleness, and patience. I don't have a spiritual gift in kindness. Be kind anyway. It's God's general will for our life. Don't neglect the general will in search of the specific will. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. So what amount of resources do we spend? And if you were to think about your life and where you're at and how you know, your aspirations, how much of our resources do we spend solely on looking for God's specific will in our life? And have we taken all of our resources and put them into that? And we're not diversified, if I can speak a little bit to the money-minded people, the people that like to, you know, invest. My 401k is in aggressive and non-aggressive. It's a balanced, it's diversified. So are you sinking all of your resources, your emotions, your efforts, your prayers into God's specific will? Maybe we need to spread those resources out. Continue to search for the specific will, but don't avoid the general will. Don't miss out on that. How do you spend your time? So what amount of resources do I spend to love, forgive, and serve? And these are all based out of those verses we just read. To feel and show compassion. What amount of resources do I spend to offer hospitality? What amount of resources do I spend to live in humility, showing kindness, gentleness, and patience in our interactions with others? So that's when it gets dangerous, when all of it's spent there and we're neglecting these. How did Jesus spend his time? He definitely had a specific direction he was going, a specific mission. But he didn't neglect the general will of God and all these things listed in your bulletin that have been up on the screen. These qualities, these actions, these attitudes, they tend to really shine in moments that we don't plan on. They happen in times in our life where they're not planned for. I mean, how many of us say, okay, well, today I'm going to be forgiving. I need to go and find someone to wrong me so I can forgive them. We don't. No, if you're going to have the attitude of being a forgiving person and have forgiveness, it has to be your attitude and the outlook of your life. Jesus' attitude and outlook has to replace yours, and then you're going to spend your time doing the things he would do. Then when you're wronged, when the opportunity, these are all the things that we listed there in your bulletin. They're opportunistic qualities. They take advantage of the opportunities that are placed in front of you. Compassion. You know, when John fell this morning and there's blood on the carpet, I'm not thinking let's get latex gloves. I'm thinking let's get something on his head. You don't have time to think about those things. If the heart of Jesus has replaced yours, then compassion is going to happen when, and no pun intended, but when the situation drops right into your life at that moment. That's when compassion happens. The only way to plan is to plan ahead to have Jesus' attitude and outlook replace yours. Then when the opportunity is there, when the opportunity to be patient is there, kind and gentle. Those are things that happen out of when opportunities come into our life. They're situational. It's taking advantage of whatever opportunity that has been placed before us and being prepared to spend our time like Jesus would spend his time in whatever situation that is. If it's a situation that calls for compassion, I'm going to spend my time the way Jesus would spend his time. If it's a place to show love, I'm going to spend my time the way Jesus would spend his time. If it's a place to show patience, kindness, gentleness, if it's a place to show hospitality, I'm going to show hospitality. I'm going to spend my time doing what Jesus would do. To forgive someone as they've wronged you. Oftentimes the time to serve someone will pass you by if you have to think about it. You know, if you have to think, what's the right thing to do here? What should I do? Or whatever. You know, I was coming home from somewhere on the other side of Harrison, and I had turned from Carolina Trace on the West Road headed towards Kroger. Those of you guys from Harrison, you know what I'm talking about? Okay. And you got the fire station on your right, and then the bridge that goes over the overpass of the highway. And it was one of the days recently where we had just the crazy weather where it was just bright and beautiful and sunny, and then all of a sudden there's a couple drops, and then all of a sudden a downpour. And this particular day, there was a lot of lightning in the, you could see it. I mean, just lighting up. And it was beautiful where I was, and you could just see the storm coming in, and it was just black and dark and nasty. And so I turned right onto West Road, and I was driving. I was alone. And when I was in college, I used to stop for all sorts of people. I'd plan for extra time on the road between Kentucky and North Carolina to help people out, to stop on the side of the road. And things are different nowadays. You know, I mean, in martial arts, we're not trained for how to defend yourself against an attack when you're in the driver's seat. You know, we haven't gotten to that level yet. I don't know if that's fifth or sixth degree. So I'm driving, and I see this person, and there's lightning, and it's dangerous lightning. I'm thinking, man, I don't really want to be out of my car, walking from the car to the house in this. And the rain starts, and then it starts, and I see someone, and he was, I don't know, maybe high school, maybe college age, might have been walking to go to work at Kroger, or may have been walking home from a, you know, after school event or whatever. It'd be a decently long walk where he was, and they were holding a book bag or something above their head. And I thought, man, I should open my door for this guy and just find out where they need to go. And I haven't done that in a while. I didn't have any kids with me. My wife wasn't with me. And I was thinking, I was like, I don't know. Is it safe? Is it, you know, you never know. And so I drive on. And then by the time I had gotten past him, the rain really started coming down. It was just dropping a little bit when I saw him. And as I passed, it really started pouring down as I was coming over the bridge. And I thought, I can't stop and reverse on the bridge because that's super dangerous. That bridge is hard to see over. And I thought, well, if I turn around and come back, and I thought, I missed it. It was gone right there. You can't always have time to think if we have the attitude and outlook of Jesus. And I wish I had a better story. I wish I had been able to come in here this morning and say, I stopped and helped him out, and he was like, oh, thank you so much, and that's not the story I have this morning. I thought about it, and I lost the opportunity. Sometimes those opportunities will pass us by if we have to think about it. You know, these actions, these opportunities, they happen when we don't know they're going to happen. And let's write this down. Love happens in the margin of life. Love happens in the margin of life. And I've said this before. You'll recognize it. Some of you will recognize it. We must welcome interruptions as God's invitation. We must welcome interruptions as God's invitations to love as Jesus loved. Now, to go along with this, I've got a number of quotes from that devotional from Like Jesus by Jamie Schneider. And we'll just have these up here and let you guys fill these in. These really hit me as I was reading through this devotional. It's a really good little 7-day. And she says, you cannot schedule love. I live on Google calendars. I have alarms that go off for all sorts of weird things, you know, just because I know I'll miss it. And I love that. I love having Google calendars in my pocket that's going to tell me, oh, you got to go do this, or you got to do that, or this is coming up, or so-and-so's in the hospital, or this is going on, or whatever, you know. And I live on that. But the truth of this, that love happens in the margin of life, you can't schedule love. There's a lot of truth in that quote. This quote, this next quote, really, I mean, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. It was kind of like that big anvil from the Bugs Bunny cartoons, you know, just boom, old Roadrunner. If you're too busy to love people, you might want to rethink your commitments. You could hear a pin drop. That's a heavy quote. If you're too busy to love people, you might want to rethink your commitment. Something's off. Something's not working right there. And then the last one, Jesus embraced interruptions because Jesus loved people and he didn't miss an opportunity to show it. He embraced interruptions because he loved people. That's who he was. And he didn't want to miss an opportunity to show his love for other people. Love happens in the margins of life. You know, I've got two boys, and I've shared about them before, and they just go out and they play and they get just dirty and just, they're boys. I've got my youngest I understand this is part of ADHD, but he doesn't like shoes. He hates wearing his shoes. And he will go outside and he'll come in with socks that were white and they're brown and they're leafy and there's sticks sticking out of them. And Judah, where are your shoes? I don't know. They're somewhere. We've been on treasure hunts for Judah's shoes many times in his little life. I think a pair of his shoes spent about 2, 3, maybe 4 days out in the woods once. And we had to bring them in and check them for spiders and bugs and stuff. And he didn't even know where they were. We just stumbled across them. Oh, here's where your shoes are. And that's just, they're like that. They don't mind getting dirty and crawling through the bushes and the leaves. And, you know, as an adult, I'm trimming bushes and I've got all the trimmings and I'm cleaning them up and I'm putting them in the wheelbarrow. And I'm thinking, oh man, there's probably spiders and bugs and I'm just going to get these things in here as quick as I can. I don't want the creepy crawlies. And when I was a kid, even up to college, I was a boss at hide and seek. I mean, I would hide anywhere. I loved that game and I was good at it. And I would hide. I remember we played in college and during the summer with one of the groups that I was there with. And I would just hide until they were just, hey, come out. We're done. We're done. It's over. 30 minutes, 45 minutes, hour, however long it would take. And I'd get in the bushes and the leaves, cover myself up and just lay there. And you'd hear things crawling around. You'd feel things, but I wasn't going to move. Because I was all right with that. I didn't mind it. There's just so much more knowledge we get, so much more things to think about as adults. There's more to be afraid of. I mean, kids just run off and they play. That's what they do. They just take off into the woods and we have to tell them, don't go past this place or don't go past there. Or stay within this, stay close to the house, whatnot, because we know what's out there. But they would just go. I know my boys would. They'd just go if we'd let them. We'd get a call from a police officer somewhere north of Columbus. Hey, we've got a couple boys here that belong to you. They were crawling around in the bushes and leaves. One of them doesn't have shoes. That would be a treasure hunt. Go looking from here to Columbus for a pair of shoes. We'd have to just write those off. But as adults, you know, we leave the house. I've left the house before just to go get gas for the lawnmower. And I'm just driving to Kroger. I'm driving through our neighborhood, and Kroger's on the other end of it. And I've gotten about halfway through our neighborhood and realized, oh, no, I left my cell phone at home. Should I turn around and get it? And what's going to happen if I break down in this nice, safe, suburban Harrison neighborhood? How am I going to get in touch with my wife? What if my wife needs to get in touch with me? You know, and you guys are laughing at me, but you've done it too. You've left without a cell phone, or you left without your driver's license, and you're thinking, you know, kids, they'll just go off. We like to play it safe as adults. This is something Jesus said in Matthew 18. It said, at that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, who then is the greatest? Say greatest. Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? He called a little child to him, and I just, because Judah is our dirtiest, I just picture Judah, you know, with no shoes, white socks that are now brown, holes in his pants. I don't think he's got a pair of pants that don't have holes in the knees or the legs. Like, I've got a pair of pants I bought that had a hole in them to make him look like I do something, you know? All of his holes are earned. None of his pants were bought with holes in them, and I don't know if any of them have no holes. Maybe the ones he wears at church, even those I think are pretty thin. But I picture a little kid like that, just dirty, dirt on his face, his hands, you know. He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Those are strong words. We like to explain away verses like that and say, well, Jesus was exaggerating. He was using a literary, you know, hyperbole, to make a bigger point by maybe he wasn't. Maybe, just maybe, Jesus said exactly what he meant to say. Unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest, greatest in the kingdom of heaven. You want to be king of the hill? You want to be the greatest? Jesus says, here's your guide. That's a great aspiration. That's a great thing to shoot for. You're made for greatness, but here's how you get there. You become like a little child. This has been close to my heart lately, and I think I picked it up a little at Catalyst. We had a kind of a debriefing on Friday, and I don't think it really sunk in and hit me at that time. But it's just kind of stirred in me, and this has been something that's really been hitting me. This verse, I think one of the people at the Catalyst brought it up. I just feel like I've become too adult. Sometimes I feel like I should be called Dustin. Or Mr. Delafield. I don't feel like I dream like I used to. I don't feel like I hope like I used to. And I have to be careful being transparent, but you know me, I'm pretty comfortable with sharing with you guys, and I think it's healthy for us. I think it's kind of ironic when I've been in every office in this building, but when I was in the office all the way across the from where the dinner theater was, there's another office way over there where Don's office is now. And when I was in that office, I had two little plaques up by the door that said Hope and Dream. And when I moved out of the office, I bought them for that office that kind of fit the, you know, the ambiance of that office. And they weren't really going to fit this office. So I told Don, I said, I'm just going to leave these here. You can throw them away. You can do what you want to with them, you know. But they don't quite fit the new office. And I just thought as I was working on the sermon how telling that was, how symbolic that was of some of my journey here. Of leaving that, you know. When it first started, I was young, and I was told, you know, you need to do some things to earn respect and to look like an adult, not look like you're the same age Jesus was when he started his ministry. So, but I've just been coming to some convictions that maybe I've become too adult. And I think I need to lose some maturity in areas, not in areas that would be dangerous or stupid, but I think I need to lose some maturity and become like a child to be more effective for the kingdom, to be the person God wants me to be. I need to become more like a child. And so this passage has been a real close passage to my heart. I think there's so many different applications for this story. I think one of the points that we can take away from is that these kids, there's nothing below them. He says you need to be like this lowly child. There's nothing below them. They don't mind getting messy. They don't mind getting dirty. They don't mind going out. And they're fearless. They're not afraid of anything. My oldest son will ride any roller coaster. We went to Kings Island. He got the orange bracelet. And he was so excited because when he went with a friend earlier in the summer, last summer, he didn't get the orange bracelet. He got the next one down. But the orange bracelet means he can ride anything in the park. And he was so excited. And we rode as many as we could ride together. And then he wanted to go on the, and I had to have someone, Delirium, is that the one that sweeps and spins? Yes. He wanted to go on that. And I was like, I like the roller coasters. That's, you can ride that on your own. And he did. See, I think one of the things when Jesus calls this little child up there, and you see this dirty little dusty child, and I think one of the images we get from that is that we need to be fearless. We need to be willing to dive into the messy. Let's write this down, and we're going to come to a close here. I know this one's a big one. Do I welcome a messy love, or do I gravitate to a neat love? How do I spend my time? Jesus said, become like a little child, a lowly little child. And as I see my kids, they're not afraid of getting messy. And we don't even need to go to kids. It's Mother's Day. How many of your mothers showed a messy love to you? And it might not have been for anybody else, but just their children. They weren't afraid to get messy. They weren't afraid to get dirty. They weren't afraid to get involved and get things there. Mothers are awesome at that. They're great examples of messy love. Let's ask us some of these questions between messy and neat. Do I welcome messy love, or do I gravitate toward a neat love? Messy love means that you might get dirty. Neat love means that you don't really want to get dirty. You try to stay tidy. You try to keep things nice and neat and tidy. Messy love means that it might get uncomfortable. Neat love means you stay in your comfort zones. You don't venture out too far. Messy love is unscheduled, just happens. And you respond and you interact as the moment happens. Messy love's that way, it's unscheduled. Neat love, I mean, how often do we try to schedule love? And we try to put that, you can't schedule love, but we try. Well, I don't have time for this, right? I don't have time to love you right now, but let me work you in. I'm so guilty of that. I think we're all there. Messy love is unpredictable. When I turned from Carolina Trace to West Road, I had no idea there was going to be someone there that really probably could have used a ride. I couldn't predict that. God didn't share that with me as some modern day prophet. No, I turned the corner, there he was. Boom, I missed it. Messy love is unpredictable. Neat love is predictable. Would we rather have time to, if I had time to plan for it? You know, that was my thought. Man, if I'd have been able to think a little quicker on my feet. No. Messy love is unpredictable. Messy love is sometimes dangerous. Neat love likes to try and stay safe. And so as we look at this list, and when you look at this list in your bulletin, I know we've got a lot in your bulletin to take home with you. But as we look at this list, I want us to ask ourselves of these things. When Jesus says, if you want to be great, he doesn't say don't be great. He said, if you want to be great, be a servant of all. Which list looks like a servant of all? It's not the neat love list. Which list? Jesus says, if you want to be great in the kingdom, here's how you do it. You're like a little child. Which of these look like the way a little child lives? It's not the neat love. Which of those two lists looks like the way Jesus lived his life and the way Jesus spent his time? If we want to make a difference in our personal life, then we have to look at how we use our time. We're all given 24 hours. How are you spending your time? Are we spending our time like Jesus?